Welcome. This is RAM Radio. RAM stands for Reformation Apologetics Ministry. The host of RAM Radio is Pastor John Coleman of Into the Word, the Biblical Alternative. Using the Bible as his guide, Pastor John plans to equip the African-American Christian community with the tools that make the scriptures become clear for practical living and protection from the false teaching. Using the discipline of apologetics will open the eyes of the student of the Word to see God's absolute truth and the original intent of the scriptures. RAM Radio will challenge what you were taught about the Bible as well as your way of thinking and living in this world. God demands more from those who say, "I believe." Grab your Bible and pen and paper. Let's begin our study. Here's Pastor John Coleman.
Thank you so much, Mark Ramsey, for that wonderful introduction to RAM Radio, the webcast. Here in the Lucy Coleman studio in Los Angeles, California, Reformation Apologetic Ministry. And today is July the 6th, 2012. Another hour plus of webcast for you because I love you to the degree that I'm going to preach to you every day of my life and make this thing ring truth. What a joy to be able to bring you another webcast. You know, we were speaking from our text yesterday from Philippians chapter 1, verse 6, for I'm confident of this very thing, that he who begin a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Jesus Christ. In other words, the work that he started in you, the good work that he started in you. I can only talk about me. See, I remember the day that I was born again. I remember that. It doesn't escape me. It's not some vague event that took place. I'm not quite sure when I believed and that kind of a deal. That's kind of ambiguous. And that, you know, that leaves way to manipulation. So I'm not gonna do like a lot of people say, well, I became a Christian so young, I was such a child, and I don't remember ever really actualizing Christ or coming to that. Nah. I had an experience with the Jesus of the Bible. I will stake my life on it. I will die behind that. Don't you just like the way those sounds just resonate from you? I will die knowing that. I love it. Well, let me continue with this as we go further. We said the last time that part two would be that we can only experience the power of God working in our lives wherever we live, whether we live in the inner city, whether we live in a country, out in the boondocks, whether we live on a mountaintop. We can't do anything unless we remember the one who does the work. And that's found in verse 6b. He who began a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Jesus Christ. He who began that work will finish that work. I like that idea. I am not one of those kinds of people that said, okay, I was a Christian, now I'm no longer a Christian. I find this kind of behavior ridiculous. I teach Philosophy 1 in college, and in Philosophy 1, of course, one of the ideas that you have to throw around in the classroom if you're going to be a good philosophy instructor at all is you got to talk about the existence of God. You know, is there a God? You have to have those discussions. That's what college is all about. That's what advanced education is. That's why you find a lot of people that went to college who's come up with the idea, well, you know, there is no God. They can't reconcile the idea of God in their lives. I've already reconciled that idea back in August of 1967. There's a God, man. I'm not crazy. I had an experience with God. I required that. I needed that because of my sinful nature. I was talking with a friend of mine the other day, And he was saying to me, I think I was sharing this with you yesterday, as a matter of fact, he said, really, you are resolute believing in this idea, right? Because many people that I know, like myself, remembers the day that Christ came into their lives. Now, they may be going through some individual crises in their lives, because each of us will go through thlipsis, tribulation. That's how we define what we go through. You know, we're going through this tribulation. But all that we have experienced in our lives, who did it? God did it. We know that. He is a God that demands the praise and the glory for all the good things that he has done. He's not demanding any praise or any glory for us. We are not the conceptualized idea of the manifest token power of God. This is why Paul wrote to the church at Corinth, and he writes, and he says, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. This is why I continue to go on. You know, I may not be a congregationalist pastor. I may not walk through the church doors, have my study there in a room where I can grab my books and sit down with a group of men every week in the study and do that, or lead the women through that. That's what I used to do. I loved it when I did it. It was a great occupation, a great task of being a congregational pastor, but now I'm an internet pastor. I'm doing the same things. I haven't changed. You may not like what I'm doing. You may not like why I'm doing it, how I'm doing it. Health-wise, I thank God. I want to tell you, I feel, man, those of you guys that really know PJ, right? I feel wonderful. There's a song that Sarah Vaughn sung on Sassy Sarah Swings in Tivoli. I think she recorded the album back in 1962 in the Tivoli Gardens in Copenhagen, Denmark. And there was a number on that album called I Feel Pretty. I feel pretty. I feel pretty. I feel pretty and witty and wild. I'm as pretty as any boy in style. Something like that. That's the way I feel. I feel pretty about my Christianity, my first century Christianity, that hallmark, that bedrock kind of a faith that holds on to what God has said. I'm not thinking about feeling like some people feel about themselves, because it really is not about that. I want to share something with you. Let's go back to our major key verse in verse 6. I want to share something. I was reading it earlier this morning when I came into the studio, when Paul talks about, you know, what was he so confident and so sure of? Well, he was sure that God would most certainly continue on to completion the good work that he began in those people in Philippi. That good work was their salvation. See, don't let anybody, like I told you yesterday, don't let anybody come and tell you that you're not saved because you don't believe the way they believe or do what they do, because it's not about that. That is what organized religion has done. I know it's a dangerous thing to teach world religions, because it causes you to look at your faith very, very, very close. And as you look at your faith very, very, very close, you start asking questions about your faith. That's one of the things that makes the faith of one that believes in Jesus Christ a decisive mode, because you can ask questions without fear of retribution. And that's a wonderful thing. That good work is their salvation. It may also have included their fellowship and sharing of their bounties with Paul. In other words, I have Christians that share their bounty with me. It is a wonderful thing. When my cupboard is almost completely empty, and if you know anything about PJ, PJ does not have a stockpile of money. No, he doesn't. But what PJ has, It's like I woke up this morning. Ooh, I think about that song. I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on Jesus. Yes, I did. I woke up that way. I woke up that way excited about this faith that I have. He had no doubt. Paul had no doubt that God would continue in the Philippians and that he had begun that work in them. God would work in them until the day of Jesus Christ. Okay, now in Philippians chapter 2, verse 16, that says, holding fast the word of life, see that? So that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory because I did not run in vain or toil in vain. And you know what? I can't speak like that. I'm thinking of the ministry that I was involved in, and I'm thinking of where I am now and looking at the church in general, not just Anselm that I pastored. But I can't say that I think that I didn't toil in vain. I think that a lot of my work was in vain. When, man, constantly, consistently, students are always turning on me. Always turning on me. Now, you know, a psychologist will say, well, John, if they're turning on you constantly and consistently, there has to be something really radically wrong with you. There's something that you're doing wrong. Yeah, I guess so. You've listened to my webcast. Why don't you tell me what I'm doing wrong? One thing that maybe what I'm doing wrong is telling the dang honest truth. You know, and it's not about you love the world more than you love God, because you don't love this world any more than I love it. Now, what I mean by that, I got up this morning. I went in my kitchen. It was clean. I went in my living room. It's clean. My house is clean because I haven't been having a house guest for the past couple of days. I love it when the young men just take off and disappear. I don't know where they are because they're grown. I don't worry about them that way. Just take off and disappear, whatnot. It was wonderful. I watched Fred McMurray's first film that he made. I forget the name of it. I was watching Turner Classics, and they showed it last night, and I was in my living room alone watching that old film in black and white, and the acting and the actors. And before that, I watched another movie and just enjoyed myself being alone, quietness, not dealing with anyone else's life. My mind being filled with valuable things instead of things that this age is so filled with. Confusion, turmoil, anxiety, hatred, bitterness, sexual explosions all over the place, and lurid language that spews from the mouth of babes. And there was a movie that I was watching last night, and Mary Pickford starred in this movie. It was a movie with Robert Mitchum when he played a preacher in a small southern town. And he married this woman and drove her mad with his foolishness. And you remember, buried her in a car, and she was under the water in the lake, and her two kids took the money and a doll, and Mary Pickford took him in. And man, what I love about that movie is her firmness, steadfastness in God, especially when Robert Mitchum played the villain and he was going to come and try to take the children, and she got a shotgun and she stood there and she started making these quibbles about the children and about how valuable they are. Hey, man, I got to tell you guys the truth. I'm a grown man and everything, but I've always been sensitive about the beautiful little babies. Tears whelmed up in my eyes. And I said, oh, God, I love these young men so much like that. They're like little babies to me that don't know no better. And you know, when I see the church and they look at these young people and they hate them because they're so foul, it is what their parents and their guardians and the adults have done to them. They basically literally destroyed them. And so when we look at our young children and we listen to their music and we look at the art styles that they're living in and everything, it's nothing but a consummate reflection of what we've done to them. Not what I've done, because I didn't raise my children like that. Whatever my children became, they became that on their own as adults. They thought that through. I'm talking about if the parent has participated in the downgrade of the child. That's what you have to do. You have to keep this focus here. Now, I want you to go with me to 1 Corinthians 15:58. That's where I want you to go. Let me go back there, because I was there and I was getting ready to handle that verse. It says this: "Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord." Be steadfast, always abounding. Aren't those good words? You see, if it is our work and not God's work that we're being steadfast about, well, then there's a selfish, prideful attitude that comes into this. I don't take young men in my house because I'm trying to be something special. I'm not trying to be some exception. I'm just trying to show God I'll love them. I'll do it. John is a rough call. You remember the last young man that you had staying with? You saw how it ended with Mario. You didn't gain any ground. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. That was one of the greatest adventures that I've ever had in my life with Mario Canto. Though he's gone out of my life now, I love that kid. I will always love him. And I've told him that on numerous occasions, that my heart abounds in love for him. Regardless of how it ended, it ended poorly because Mario don't want to change. Mario is a man who has chosen his own path. And I pray for him, and I pray that God will bless him in whatever endeavors he sets his hand to do. He doesn't feel the same way about me. That's all right. Because as a parent is supposed to feel that way about his children. Now, he's not your child. How can you feel? Well, why don't you feel that way about mine? No, that's your job. See, those of you that are parents, you need to remain steadfast and confident. You need to keep the focus, buddy. That's what you need to do, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. Raise up your children in the way that they ought to go. You don't participate with them in folly. You don't do that. Now, I'll go out with the young man. He may go to a place of folly. I'm not committing folly with him. I may be there to protect him. I may be there to point out that, you know what? I preached a sermon years ago talking about the folly of foolishness. Yeah, I'll never forget that. Boy, I'd love to find that outline somewhere. But I see what he's saying. God's work is not folly. If it's our work, then that mess is going to dissipate. We can't ascribe everything to him if he didn't do it. We are not to remove ourselves from the work that he has given us to fulfill. And why? Because we are attempting to fulfill his will through the work that we are doing for him today. That is what he has called us to do. We are to secure an abundance of fruit by performing his objectives wherever we are, in the city, in the country, in a condo, in a little two-bedroom bungalow, wherever we are to fulfill it. If God started us, God will complete himself in us. That's how we become a better person. That's how our community becomes better. That's how everything turns out for the best. We see the three dynamic O's of God. He is omnipotent. In other words, he's all powerful. If he said he's going to complete the work in you, he's going to do it. I keep confident that me getting up early with God on my mind, coming in the studio, charging up all these computers, doing this work, is exactly what God wants me to do. I don't know how many people are listening to what and downloading what. I am going to do it. And for those of you that listen to me and come to my homiletic class, there will be a homiletic class tonight. I will not forget my class tonight. I need to call and remind all my students that I will be here teaching. God is omnipresent. In other words, He is with us and knows the situation. He knows what I'm going through. He knows what you're going through. He knows every up, every down, every single thing about it. He knows that he's not only called me, but he's called me to perfect it. I want to tell you guys something. I know you're not going to believe me on this because it's difficult for you to believe. Listen to me. You pastors out there, you pastors, you young pastors, you do what you have to do and keep on doing it. I hope that those of you that I've taught over the years will take the lessons and apply them into your life as you live it. Don't try to live out my life. Don't try to follow me to do what I'm doing because God has given me a vision. Now, this is what I want you young pastors to ask of yourself. Are you young teachers? So to say, what is the vision that he's given you? That's it. What is the vision that he's given you? I remember in homiletics, I gave out a sheet that said, how often do you think of the calling? How often do you put your mind through this situation where you're trying to answer the question, well, is God really doing something in me? Or is it just my imagination running away with me? See, you figure that out for yourself. That's what makes PJ unique. I know what it is in me. Man, this is, man, you know, God, this is beautiful here, man. This is a beautiful thing. I'm here making a webcast. These things can last forever. Long as somebody got a copy of it and they're just sharing that, these things can last forever. I'm not. I'm going to be dead. And I've been having those conversations with friends of mine lately, talking about when I die, how I'm going to die. Everybody tells me, oh, no, John, you're going to live a long time because God wants you to live a lot. And he may strike me in the middle of my sleep tonight and take me out of here on July 6, 2012. I praise his blessed name forever and ever. Jehovah reigns forever. He is good, whatever he wants to do. Praise his precious name. I love him so much. Can you say the same, having known what he intends on you to do? Is he forever present in your life, in the forefront of your mind, making those kinds of impressions on you? The third O is that he's omniscient. He knows everything from the beginning to the end. There ain't nothing that you can hide from him. You know, when folk don't like you and folk talk about you and say things about you, let them talk. They don't know nothing. Because if God has started a work in you, listen to me, people. You weren't there in 1967. I know some of you was out there doing unscrupulous things in 1967. Or doing nothing at all. Trying to figure out what the heck you gonna do. In 1967, do you know what? That's only about 6 years, 5 or 6 years after I graduated from high school in 1967. Man, do you want to know something? I was a young man. Where were you in 1967 when God spoke to you? Or did he speak to you before that? Are you going to do the John MacArthur thing? I can't tell really whether God ever said anything to me. And it's amazing when you hear guys like that talk, because Greg Coco said the same thing. Most of them say that. Then you got to ask yourself this question. Why would those guys be involved in a ministry where God has never said anything to them, but yet God told them what to do? God didn't tell them what to do. They had a business mind. They wanted to make some bucks off of the name of God. I didn't do that. I got into a fail-safe system that was not meant to procure anything because ain't nobody doing nothing practically. God gives each of us an individual mission to accomplish, and it don't take our whole lives to go to a church and hear the same message. You know what used to bug me when I was a congregational pastor? Every Christmas, every Easter, I tell the same event over and over and over again. And then when you'd ask some of the students about the event, they had all the points all mixed up. Finally, I stopped preaching about Christmas and Easter. I did. I said, you guys know that. Let's continue in a series. Not going to talk about that. You know about that. You know that Mary had a baby without the instrumentality of a penis from a man. You know that. I asked one of my students in the homiletic class, or a Bible study class, could they explain the incarnation? The students right out of the Catholic Church. And you know how much emphasis the Catholics placed on the incarnation. My dearly beloved student couldn't answer the question. I said, you've been in church all that time, all those years, and you can't answer that question yet? It is no wonder that the Muslims think that we that are professing believers ought to have our heads cut off. We're a useless group of individuals. Well, it's time for us to really solidify and to concentrate on those things. We have to get the focus upon who we are. That's what God does. Paul states in verse 6 that the God who starts knows the outcome. He knows the finish. For this reason, see, if he's omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient, we are to retain a certain confidence in him as he restores us, and not only us, but the places where we live. And you know what? Just because God is on your side doesn't mean that he's going to lift the whole community up. Doesn't happen that way. Each lone individual on their own has to make this affront towards God in order for God to help them. We should take confidence as he restores some of our homes, some of our children. Oh, I would love for God to come in and do a miraculous work in the life of the child. But you know what I was taught? I was taught by Christianity. Well, he'll do that if you live right, then they'll live right. Yeah, I've done that. That don't work. Because the Bible says in Jeremiah 17:10, I think I can quote it verbatim by now, the heart is desperately wicked above all things. And who can know it? But then God says in the next verse, I, God, I made the heart. I tried the reins. See, he says, I'm the one that does that. He's saying, I'm the one that controls that heart. Have you ever heard a parent say, I'm going to pray till my child comes to Jesus and join the church and become an usher? What are you ruining that child for? What are you doing that for? You want that child to grow up and to be what God wants them to be. But to carry this idea of God with them, keeping the focus themselves for the rest of their lives, that's what you want. That's what you want. Now let's move on down to point number 3 here as we continue to deal with this outline. And we're going to look at verse 6c as we go back to Philippians, our main text, chapter 1. And we're looking at verse 6. For I am confident of this very thing, that he who began the work in you will perfect it to the day of Jesus Christ. That we can only experience this marvelous, wonderful power of God in our lives, where we are, where we live, where we work, where we play, if we are willing to fight until the work is done. Where do I get that from? Look at verse C of verse 6. Until the day of Christ Jesus. In other words, I retain my confidence even up until the very moment that he comes and takes me with him to be with him in heaven. You know what? I'm having to meet with my daughters within a few weeks. I am going to spend some darn good serious time with them, because I am concerned now about how I end up. As I said yesterday, my daughter's a little angry. They're angry at what church people do to their daddy, and they ought not be. My daughters are not as spiritual as I would like them to be, just like my play sons are not. And I love my babies. My babies are not perfect, just like their daddy isn't perfect. I'm going to love my babies. I ain't thinking about you. I'm going to love my babies. I'm going to love them. You know, I see these movies. I hear this talk on the radio. If your children do this, if your children do that, I will never love them. And I'll cut them off and all that. You know what? You're full of crap. That's what you are. There's no way that the very child that comes from your loins God has blessed you with that beauty. Ooh, Jesus, I get goosebumps when I think about my little girls. Ooh, Jesus, when I think about them, when they took their first step, when they talked for the first time, and I held a conversation with them. Oh, Jesus, I just want to die and think about those moments for eternity. I ain't thinking about you. I'm not going to hate my babies. And you know what? Excuse me. I know some Christians that can do that easily. They can hate their own children. They can just say, now I can cut you off. I can cut off people that, and hey, I don't know anything about these people. I guess they had history somewhere, and God bless the child that God has owned. But, you know, I got history too, and I am loving in a very real and determined way. I am loving the relationship that I had and have, I should say, the relationship that I have with my children. I love that. And I am going to love that for the rest of my days. Now, I hope that you love your children that way. That's why you clothe them. That's why you feed them. That's why you encourage them. That's why you hug them. And you know what? I'm going to say this again. I know what I have experienced with these young men. When I have young men come up to me and hug me and kiss me on my neck and warmly embrace me, both of them, 24 years old, people, I ain't lying. These people manifest love because they're loving creatures. God put it in all of us. This, it's not a handicap. It is a utility that he's equipped us with to love. And though I see spots of it, minor glimpses, glitches, if you will, of this wonderful, tremendously marvelous attribute of God, turns me on. And to see a human being that has never experienced that with their own child, to me, is totally ridiculous. Let me leave it alone. This life in Jesus only has meaning if there's a continuation until completion. See, this isn't about what church you're going to or what ministry you're involved in or the good work that you're doing or having a day dedicated to you after you stand up and everybody go blah, 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 blah. It is not about that. It is not about seeing those 100s or if you're in a very highly restrictive reformed church, everybody dressed in the same kind of suit, singing in the same key, a mighty fortress is our God. A mighty bulwark. I sing those songs too, and I love those songs. That's a wonderful thing. Whenever I go to Grace Community Church, that's John MacArthur's church, sometimes I feel like I want to be involved in high, deep worship. That's when I go to Grace. As a matter of fact, I may drive out to Grace this Sunday. Just may do that. I hope the ushers don't stop me at the door, because I just feel like I need to experience at times some high worship. I love the songs of the church. I do. I don't know the black church to attend where they're singing those good songs, and they mean it, because in the black church now the songs that they sing are all self-imposed stuff. I don't want to hear about that. I want to go worship, and I like all of that. And if you've never experienced that worship, where everybody is standing up singing out of the hymnal, and then you're standing there in your pew alone and you get choked up while you're singing. This always happens to me when I go to Grace or when I go to the Church of the Open Door, you know, one of those kind of churches. I think they're still out in, I don't know where they are now, but whenever I go to those churches, I get choked up as I sing praises to God, because that is high praise unto God. See, that is going to come from me until the day of completion. See, and I can't make that happen in anybody else's life. nor can you. You can't make that happen in anyone else's life. God has to place it in you, and then he wants that to go until it's completed. The Lord is looking for those in his family who are willing to fight every day. Those special individuals that believe in this insight as they live from day to day in their jobs, in their condo, where they work, where they play. They believe this. Those that see the vision clearer than ever. Check this out. The longer you live, the clearer the vision becomes, because the longer you live and the closer to God you become, then his will being manifested in your life becomes clearer and clearer all the time. So this life has purpose as we foresee our families, our friends, our communities, our churches, carrying on this heritage, so to say. The church has always been a vital part of this completion. This is why we have been cautioned to come to spiritual progress. Spiritual progress. That's where we need to be. The believer, the true believer, has the answer for their community, as God is desirous of reaching that community. And that's the way evangelistic outreach looks. It doesn't look like a book written and a form taken and objectives sustained by a discipler who has a cadre of individuals who give lip service to God, but not life service. Because you see, giving lip service and not life service, and don't, look, let's not get this twisted here. God is not going to call some of you to go into a bar and just have a cup of coffee. No, because you think about a bar is where alcoholic beverages are served. And you think that that is the epitome of the pit where Satan dwells. I don't know why you would think that. I really don't. Satan may be dwelling in the epitome of your mind, but I don't know anything about that. God is not going to call some of you into places where women go and have abortions, because when you go there, you feel outraged. You want to clean house. You want to talk about these women and accuse them of being murderers for the fetuses that they have cut out of them. And you do look a little strange trying to tell somebody that they can't do what they feel they can do in their own bodies. You're just not supposed to do it in yours, because God is in you working it out to completion, right? See, let me give you an example. If I'm caught in some major sin, any major sin, I'm just speaking. If I'm caught in some major sin, and you were standing in front of me, you know who you are. You were standing. And you were standing in front of me. What would you say? You would say, "Well, John, how do you feel?" I know me. I said, "I feel good." "What do you mean, how do I feel? Feelings have nothing to do with this." "Well, what do you have to answer for yourself, John?" I said, "Wait a minute. To you? Nothing. To you, I answer nothing. But to God, who knows everything, who sees everything, hey, I will answer to him. I will complete this until the day of completion. But John, what about this issue, this item here that I want you to come to me?" And you are not God. I don't have to come to you about anything, because I don't even want to know about your dirt, which is right there. Oh, and then you would possibly come back, right? I would never do that. Oh, I know you wouldn't. That's not your thing. You know what your thing is. You know what you would do. Then you drop your eyes. See, because, see, you know what it is. And you know that I don't know because you've been keeping that thing a secret for years. I'm not keeping mine a secret. I can't keep it a secret. It is who I am. Now, I'm not asking you about yours, am I? Why aren't I asking you about yours? Because that's yours. God has to take you through that. And my goodness, I have my Lord to take me through mine. Then you would come back and say, wait a minute, PJ, I thought that God erased it. I said, there you go. You're looking at my life again. We're not talking about erasures here. We're talking about being real with who you are. What is your vision that God has given you? How are you completing that vision to the end? Now, this is what I do as a radio teacher or a computer teacher, because I'm not on the radio anymore. But as a computer teacher, that's what I do. I'm asking you a question that's going to make you think about your what is he completing to the end in you? That's what I want to know. I'm 68 years old. I know you young. You more computer. Like I had Kevin Nash in my studio a couple of months ago, and he said, man, all this stuff you got is antiquated. You know what I said to myself while he was standing up here looking at this? I said to myself, it works. It does what I needed to do. Yeah, it looks like a bunch of wires all tangled up with all this equipment. I don't know how God has this thing going, but it's been going strong since 2002, right here in this Lucy Coleman studio. Yes, it has. It may be antiquated, but brother, but sister, it's working. In that it's working, that's all that matters to me. Is it working in your life like that? Have you come to it, what God has called you to do? That's what it's all about. You need to keep the focus. Stop looking at me. Stop looking at me wondering why Pastor John is doing what he's doing. I'm going to bring this smoke right back on you. What are you doing for Jesus Christ today? What are you doing? All of you dudes that are writing these books, all you cats that are going to seminary, why have you chosen that particular profession? Has some teacher, some professor told you to choose that? Is that what God wants you to do? Is God leading you in some parts of the boroughs of New York to get right back out there in those dirty streets from whence you came because you are Puerto Rican? You know you love your people. You know you love the food. And you're around here trying to put on a tie and cut your hair and talk like somebody from New England because you don't like who you are. Why? Why? Oh, my goodness. I see the young lad walking down the street coming home after being gone for more than 24 hours. These are the questions that you must answer yourself. You hear bro man in the background. See, because they come and they go. See, that's what you need to do. How do you experience this power in your own individual lives? Can we retain that certain confidence? And this confidence that I'm talking about is this certain confidence that we have in God through the study, through the obligation, through the implementation of what he has told us to do. That's what I'm asking. Because if we cannot, we will not. All right. So let me ask this. Do you remember the one who is really doing the work? Even though he said that he's going to complete it in you until the day of completion, you have to recall the one that's doing the work in you. Yeah, I'm trying to levy this guilt upon you a little bit because what I'm trying to get you to do is to take the focus off of John Coleman. Do you know what John Coleman's life is all about? You know, I know a man that can really tell you what my life is all about. He's my radio producer, Mark Ramsey. Mark Ramsey has been with me since day one. I've been doing this stuff for years. And he knows that this is not about John Coleman. This is about a greater calling. Mark has been blessed and gifted enough to experience the finality of that. So therefore, he knows that John is going to continue to do the work that he has called me to do. Just like Mark is going to continue to do the work that he was called to do without any misgivings. With that being said, I think that I've whipped this horse to death, and we will continue on with further studies. This will be called Keeping the Focus Part 2, and I just want to share with you, students of the homiletics, you see how much you can do with one verse here. I'm going almost 2 hours just with one verse. That's what I want you students of the homiletic to be able to do. Thank you so much for coming to my website and participating. And until we meet again, you know the drill. Stay into the word.